This is The Dean's Desk with Kurt Mueller, Dean of the Faculty of Communication, Art, and Design.
Hello, everyone. Our guest today is Dr. Mark O'Connell, a professor in fashion studies in our School of Fashion at Seneca. Mark is a prolific author, researcher, fantastic prof. We'll get to all of that in a little bit, Mark, but why don't we start with what brought you to Seneca? How did you, what was your path to get here?
I was originally a designer, so I was not an academic to start with. I was with MAC Cosmetics in the creative department, and then I had a clothing line, and things weren't really lining up for me in terms of production and producing more things to put in the world, honestly. Like, I was ready for a change, and I really still wanted to be very much in fashion. I just didn't want to be manufacturing more product at that point, because there wasn't really the artisanal markets that have opened up since. So I started teaching, and it ended up being something really satisfying and exciting, so I could still be very much invested in what's going on in the world of fashion, but I could also bring in messages of sustainability and ethics and all the things that are harder to do when you're running a small business in Canada, because it's really all about, you know, bottom line when you're running a fashion brand, right?
And the fashion industry in general has a pretty checkered history when it comes to sustainability and some of those other considerations.
It's definitely improved over the last 10 years, because we're going back about 13, 14 years ago, and it's a lot better than it was back then. It wasn't even a conversation.
And when you started teaching, what was it about teaching that you liked, and what was it about Seneca that made you think this is a place that you wanted to stay?
Seneca is a very exciting environment to be in, and I know this because I was actually teaching concurrently at two different colleges at the same time. And honestly, and I'm not going to name any names, but the whole atmosphere was very different at Seneca. I felt really supported. At that point, there was a chair at the School of Fashion, Gita Hansen, who was really interested in what I was doing research-wise. She's also a fashion sustainability person and into natural dyeing. And through our discussions, like, I started the fashion studies program here. There was just so much scope for development, and the students really were exciting. And it was just, I'd say the whole atmosphere was really exciting and supportive. So that was my Seneca draw.
And what was it like teaching students as opposed to working in the business?
That's a very good question. The nice thing about teaching students is that you have the development time that you don't have in manufacturing, even at MAC Cosmetics. I mean, we were very creative and it was always a really exciting environment, but there was always like deadlines. Things were, you know, because when you're producing, you have to get things out to we were, you know, dealing with global markets for all of our collateral and design stuff we were producing in the studio. So everything was like on getting couriered. It was stress. And there was never any time for self-reflection. Whereas with students, you know, you have the project brief, you have the whole series of lectures that support the project, and then you get to discuss it. And then you have basically the post-mortem when you're doing like the critiques and you're giving the evaluation. So it's a much more holistic process around getting students to think about their design work. And it was something that, and I always tell the students, like, I never had this luxury when I was out there, because we were literally halfway into the next 10 projects by the time anything hit the market.
Time to think.
Yeah, there was never time to think. But here, that's all we do, right? Mm-hmm. We're like a buzz factory of thoughts and exciting ideas.
Well, speaking of exciting ideas, I know that the School of Fashion in general is a leader with regard to embedding sustainability into the curriculum, but there are elements related to our curriculum integration project that you've also been leading on, and I want to talk a little bit about the Fashion Resource Center. Can you describe what that is and the kind of work that you do there?
The Fashion Resource Center is a teaching museum of fashion garments that we have at the School of Fashion, and we have over 30,000 garments that all have connections to Canadian fashion history. So it's a very interesting collection to work with. And when I was teaching fashion history, I was very much, and I took fashion when I was a student, and the fashion history I was taught was not particularly diverse and definitely wasn't representing a whole lot of different parts of the population. And that wasn't reflected in who I was teaching in my classroom. So I wanted to develop collateral and support so my students could see themselves reflected in what I was teaching them in the history classes. So Michelle Cote, who's the chair of the School of Fashion, and I started to develop a diversity project. So this is a joint faculty/student research project where I work with student researchers and we develop and publish stories on diversity in Canadian fashion. Like, we've done some really interesting stuff around disability, queerness, you know, Black Canadian designers, you know, Indigenous. Like, it's been so exciting. I immediately have a resource that I can direct the students to when I'm teaching fashion history. I just pull up the website and I'm like, I will have assignments where I'll have students do discussion posts where I have them pick one that they engage with and just sort of give me some feedback on it. So it's an easy access that will not only reflect the students, but also give them knowledge about everybody else.
That's fantastic. Well, I mean, it's well documented. If students see themselves in the curriculum, they do better. It's you know, well established. I want to talk a little bit about the Resource Center in terms of what you have access to, because I know every time anyone walks into that room and sees those thousands of garments, it's really mind-blowing. Can you talk about what it's like for the students to actually be able to touch and feel and see these garments?
It is mind-blowing for me too, because we have, I think, some of the earliest pieces we have. Like, we have a frock coat from the 1700s, that a men's formal coat that is still in really good condition. I mean, not that I would ever wear anything from our collection, but it's a nice coat, right? So there's things like that. And then we have these odd things like children's corsets, you know, which is like, so much about social conditioning in the body. Like, you're putting, I mean, a kid doesn't need a corset. It's all about training someone into who they're going to become, right? Like, what role they're going to take in society. And then we have a lot of really interesting items of Canadian fashion design. We've got collections from people like Honorable Dr. Vivian Poy, who is a very illustrious Seneca grad from our fashion program and also was a senator. So she was a knitwear designer, and we have her whole archive. Right. So I took this term student researchers into the Resource Center last week. And it's like this fantasy world. I said, be prepared. It's like Narnia. You go through this little door and then you've got this unbelievable resource of these clothes. So there is also a searchable library database where you can go and actually look at 360 scans of about 1600 of the garments. So that was amazing. We worked with the library on that project. We got a grant. And so students can like engage with them visually that way, but there is no experience like when you bring it into the class. Because last week, again, I was teaching the crinoline era, so we're looking about 1830s. And so I had garments, like I had two bodices, I had the children's corset from that actual era. So the students were able to, you know, look at them and see, like, there's a tactile engagement with something you don't get from a photograph, however well documented it is, because our photographs are great. But the students, I mean, they were like, I can't believe this is from, you know, I mean, how long ago was, my math is terrible, but the 1850s, right? Like, and then in the fashion history classroom, we also have mannequins dressed in gowns from the eras that the students don't touch because they're too delicate and fragile. But we definitely have, you know, it's meant to be a teaching collection. So there are garments that the students can actually handle, you know, carefully and look at up close. So it's just, it's the students comment on it. Like, I, you know, all of a sudden they realize that someone wore that. You know, we have a wedding dress from 1856, 57 from a woman in Ontario, and we have a picture of her wearing it on her wedding day. So, like, there's the dress and there is her photo, and all the connections a student make, it makes history very real. It makes people realize that this happened to real individuals. Like, history wasn't this abstract thing that you know, we didn't just start today.
So amazing resource for our students and faculty. And I understand external researchers come here as well to look at that center. We are here with Dr. Mark O'Connell, a professor in the School of Fashion. Mark, you just recently had your latest book release at an iconic bookstore. And I understand that was a really special occasion for you. Can you describe that?
Absolutely. So the book is called Lilac Time at the Rodeo, Stories of Identity, AIDS, and Fashion. And it was about people we lost during the 90s, during the early AIDS era. And the book launch was at Glad Day Bookshop, which is now the oldest LGBTQ+ bookshop in the world. It was established, I think, around 68, 1969. And because bookstores have been going under, so some of the older ones in Europe are no longer there. And also, I mean, we were one of the earliest. So it was such an exciting experience to be in there in this historical space, launching a very queer book about history, right? And, you know, there was some apprehension I had about having a live launch because after COVID, people don't show up the way they used to, but it was packed out. I mean, I sold out of the book. It was really an amazing evening. My students were there. My fellow faculty members were there. My mom was there, my closest friends. And it was just this really warm, exciting room. And I could do readings. And I had my student researchers there who like helped me with, you know, we recorded an Instagram and a TikTok and all that kind of stuff that I'm not particularly fluent in. Like, they are teaching me all the time. And so it was a very special evening at that bookstore.
That was just your latest book. You've written several, right?
Yes, I have. I'm currently working on a more traditional fashion history book for Bloomsbury, UK, called Canadian Fashion Economies, which deals with our early economic engagements with fashion items like fur hats and blanket coats. And that came out of a lot of my academic publishing. I've published some books of poetry, some other books of fiction. I have a second Lilac Time book that is coming out very soon. So I keep busy.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you're featured quite a bit in our FCAD newsletter because every time you have a publication, we like to feature that. And you are, I think it's almost monthly, you're there. So congratulations on how prolific you are as an author. You also really focus in your work, both in teaching, but also in your research, on the connection between culture and fashion and social justice. Can you expand on that a little bit in terms of, it's really interesting to me, the things we can glean from fashion, like the children's corset that you mentioned.
Absolutely. So for me, fashion is the most powerful communicator visually that we have. I mean, again, this is the discussion I always have with the students early on in the fashion history course. How do you read a room? It's always through what people are wearing, how they present themselves. So much of who we are and our identity is packaged up in how we, the kind of clothing that we wear and the image that that represents, right? So good or bad. You know, so in terms of the social justice, right, there's the visual communication, but there's also communications of power in terms of production. There's been some very egregious incidents that have happened in globalized fashion production, like the Rana Plaza disaster in Bangladesh, where thousands of people were killed in, I think it was maybe 1,200 people in seconds when this factory collapsed.
You know, it was just a matter of time before that building collapsed. It was brutal.
Yeah. And like the banks that were at the entry level of this plaza, they did not make their employees go in. Garment workers didn't want to go in, and they were hitting them with sticks to get them in the building. Like, it was ugly. And there were cracks in the walls, and the power went out, as it does occasionally, and the generators went in, and that's what destabilized the building, and it pancaked. So that is also a form of power communication, because we're trying to get things done really cheaply, really quickly, in unregulated offshore environments. And so that's one of my big research areas, is how can we look at globalization as something that is equitable. I mean, I'm not against globalization, right? Like, we live in a globalized world. My problem is exploitation when some lives are valued less than others and when people are dying literally to produce cheap clothing. Like, that is impossible for me. So it definitely was a huge catalyst for my PhD work.
Do you think we're making progress in this respect?
I hope so. I think that there's certainly, the optics are much better. There's much more visibility. And I would say yes, definitely. You know, we have a new prophet, Seneca, who is doing equitable production in Bangladesh. You know, she's in our School of Fashion, and she actually works in a globalized environment, but she does it in a way that does not exploit people. So that, I think, is the way of the future. So I think there's still a long way to go, right? I mean, we still have a lot of overproduction and pollution and all the, you know, the ancillary impacts of fashion. But I think definitely, because as I said, 10, 15 years ago, this wasn't even discussed. It was like people looked at you like you're really strange when you were talking about sustainability. I remember those people because, you know, I interviewed them for my master's, and, you know, they were doing it back then, and it was not, you know, now it's grooved. I mean, the fashion studies program had the first dedicated sustainability class in the School of Fashion, but now all the programs, it's part of the core learning, which I think is really gratifying and important.
Definitely important. And, you know, thanks to your work and your passion for the subject. So we're glad that you made the choice to come to Seneca. Mark, anything else you want to add today?
I just would say I like being at Seneca. Honestly, I like the fact that we are in an environment, because my background is so design-based, I like teaching applied design, right? Like, the polytechnic aspect of Seneca, I find, is really conducive to what I do, because on the one hand, I want to educate good designers. You know, I don't want to be living in a fully abstract, theoretical, academic world. I like the fact that my students are making and doing, because I'm also a maker. But then here we also have a huge scope for advanced research that is theory-based, that is social justice-based. And I am very grateful that my work is supported. I mean, my student researchers are funded by Seneca. I get course release to do things. I've had, you know, time off to do a lot of different things to support the work that I'm doing. So there is this really nice synergy of maker, but also incorporating larger ideas, which I think is really unique to us as a polytechnic. And I think it's a real asset and a real plus.
Absolutely. It's a real value add. And I see how your work and your research transmits into the work you do in the classroom as well, and our students benefit from it. So great to have you here. That was Dr. Mark O'Connell, professor in the School of Fashion.
You have been listening to The Dean's Desk with Kurt Mueller, Dean of the Faculty of Communication, Art, and Design, produced by Seneca's Radio Broadcasting students.